the Radio Ranch in beautiful Sugar Land, Texas, where life truly is sweeter. It's the Bombastic Blogcast for Monday, January the 22nd, 2024. I'm the G-Man, Dan Gallo.
Hey, G-Man.
There yourself. Defender of the peace, keeper of the justice, purveyor of truth, and one heck of a nice guy. Since it is Monday, let's do the Monday march back to work. Come on, throw your shoulders back, stiffen that backbone a little bit, and force a smile on your face, and everything is going to be just fine. It's time now for the official start to the festivities with
the Daily Datagram.
You got it. Words of wisdom, words of inspiration, brain droppings, or noggin nuggets. You get to make the call. It says here, most women want a man with both feet firmly planted on the ground. Wow. Of course. The only problem with that is he can't put his pants on that way. Let's move along now to the so-called educational part of the blogcast. Here we go.
Twisted history.
It's important stuff.
Gather around, kids, because a lot of things happen on this day throughout history. Some cool, some not so cool. Just the same, you need to know your twisted history.
Yes, you do.
You might be quizzed.
See, there you go. Well, now that we're done with the threats, let's get on with the meat and potatoes here. On this day in 1970, the Boeing 747, the world's first jumbo jet, entered commercial service for Pan American Airways with its maiden voyage from New York's JFK International to London Heathrow Airport. See, in those days, air travel was actually enjoyable. I know, you find it hard to believe, but it's true. And it was on this day in 1992, the Space Shuttle Discovery launched on STS-42, carrying Dr. Roberta Bondar, who became the first Canadian woman and the first neurologist in space. Wow, a neurologist, huh? Boy, she sure had her nerve.
I don't care who you are, that's funny right there.
Is it just me, or do we have a crowded VP candidacy field? I don't recall it being this crowded in previous years, and maybe I wasn't paying attention. I don't know. But I get the feeling that we have a crowded field this time around, and that's okay. That's okay. I can handle that. The landscape is just brimming with speculation, prediction, anticipation. You got whispers of a potential vice presidential pick that have emerged from the Trump camp. Donald Trump Jr., pay attention to this young fella. I don't know that he's giving up any secrets. But I don't see Donald Trump Jr. as being the kind of a person who would be saying things that his father wouldn't approve of. You get my drift there? Now, he's the oldest son, and he dropped a significant hint that could shape the future of the Republican ticket by suggesting that Tucker Carlson might be in the contention. You know, now Carlson is known for his unapologetic conservatism. And I think the thing that really endears Tucker Carlson to people is that occasional laugh that erupts from him, from his body, you know? He'll be giving a speech, and all of a sudden he gives that shrill laugh, and it's hilarious. And you realize that here we have somebody who seems to be pretty harmless. I don't think that anybody doubts that Tucker Carlson would one day become an excellent president. And you have to make that consideration if you're going to be a vice president. But he's made it very clear in the past that he's not interested in being a VEEP. And I understand that because look at the man. He's having all kinds of fun right now. Got his own media outlet now. And he gets to interview anybody he wants and interview them in the manner he wants. And he's a perfect gentleman. Very good guy. But just the same, here you have Don Jr. suggesting that Tucker might be in contention for the VEEP slot should Donald Trump secure the nomination. And I don't think there's much doubt that Donald Trump is going to secure the nomination. Believe me, my friend, the American people want Donald Trump back in the White House. The sooner the better. Now, the idea of Carlson joining forces with Trump it's not a matter of familial musings, but a strategic consideration, grounded in ideology. Think about it this way. Even if Tucker Carlson wouldn't under any circumstances whatsoever consider becoming VP, he has no interest in the job. merely talking about Tucker Carlson as being a serious consideration on the part of Donald Trump, I think boosts Donald Trump's popularity, don't you? I mean, everybody likes Tucker Carlson. I even think some lefties like him. So they keep talking, Tucker Carlson, Tucker Carlson, Tucker Carlson. And then somewhere up the road, Tucker Carlson issues a statement and said, look, I am not in contention. I don't want the job, period. Please respect that. Okay. But think of all the mileage Donald Trump would gain between now and that point where Tucker Carlson says, okay, enough talk about it. I'm not in the race. See? So it's going to be interesting to watch. Now, back on Thursday on Newsmax, Rob Finnerty was talking to Don Jr., and here's what Don had to say.
Could you see your father running with Ron DeSantis? I asked him that question over the summer, and he didn't rule it out. Could you see Ron DeSantis?
It's hard. You know, people do that. Like, you know, I would do whatever I could to make sure it wasn't Nikki Haley. But, a Ron DeSantis, could I see? You're never going to rule out someone that is, you know, a leading contender. It doesn't mean that's who you go with. I could see other people that would be great. I'd love to see, you know, a J.D. Vance. I'd love to see a Tucker Carlson. I'd love to see, you know, people who are just principally, in alignment as well as, like, aggressive. You actually need a fighter. The Republicans in Washington, D.C. are weak. You can have the House, the Senate, and they'll still roll over.
Don, is your dad serious about Tucker Carlson? Are those rumors serious?
I would imagine, you know, listen, that's clearly, it would be on the table, right? I mean, they're very friendly. I think they agree on virtually all of these things. They certainly agree on stopping the never-ending wars. And so, you know, I would love to see that happen. And, you know, that would certainly be a contender.
Ben Carson, those rumors legit?
Ben's great. I mean, what a great American, someone who was just steadfast and loyal throughout all of the insanity of the last years. You know, I'd love to see that. And, you know, Ben's almost too nice for politics. That may be the only problem. Can you withstand the insanity that's in there? I'd love to see a Ben Carson in there.
That might be a good thing. But no way Nikki Haley.
Well, that's my opinion. I don't make these decisions, but I don't think that's currently really on the table.
But your father listens to you. Your father listens to you, his family, maybe more than anyone else. That
listen,
opinion matters.
I've been pretty involved in the political game for quite some time, and I think, more importantly, I actually, you know, let's say live with the base. I hang out with the base. Those are my people. Those are my friends. I'm not, you know, the New York City rubber chicken dinner, like charity circuit guy. Like, you know, I hunt and fish and travel with real Americans. And I think I have a pretty good understanding of where they're at.
So from that, we know nothing more than we knew going into this segment, right? But Carlson's influence, and this is the important thing to consider, it's Carlson's influence that reaches way beyond the television screen. He's a figure who really resonates with the grassroots, and he has the ability to articulate the concerns of everyday Americans. He does it every single day of his life. He has a gift for that. So his potential candidacy as vice president would bring a level of media savvy and communication prowess. Now, the reason Iowa caucuses have already demonstrated the enduring support for Trump, I mean, man, what a victory that was. And this early win underscores the strength, the pull of Donald Trump, and how it continues to exert on the Republican electorate. And this is a factor that's very important. It could further enhance or be enhanced by Carlson at his side. But again, there are great people. I mean, J.D. Vance, I didn't consider that until somebody dropped his name the other day. J.D. Vance would be very good. I think the only thing that hinders J.D. Vance is lack of political experience. But then again, isn't that what the American people are really clamoring for here with Donald Trump? Lack of political experience. I mean, if you have a lot of political experience, believe me, you're going to be thwarted in your efforts to drain the swamp. It ain't going to happen. If you're part of the political elite, you'll never make an effort to drain the swamp. And this swamp must be drained because the swamp is draining us, taxpaying Americans. Look at how much you're having to shell out for a loaf of bread. how much you have to shell out for a gallon of gasoline. Your income dropped by 25% across the board over the last 3 years, in the time that Joe Biden's been in the White House. And the swamp is solidly behind Joe Biden, because the swamp is solidly behind Barack Obama. And they're going to do anything and everything they can to extend the reign of power of Barack Obama. Now, you've got critics who view this potential pairing of Tucker Carlson and Donald Trump with skepticism. But there's a fact there, and that is that both Trump and Carlson have consistently championed the causes that are so near and dear with conservatives across the country. From opposition to progressive policies to advocating for American sovereignty and economic nationalism. And also, both have stated their deep desires to keep us out of wars. So their combined ticket could represent the epitome of Republican ideals. But the problem is, you still have that segment, particularly among the mainstream media, who are going to continue to hound Donald Trump over and over and over and over again to make sure that he selects a female or a black female for vice president. And all I'm going to say about that is, that's what Biden did, and look where it got us. So there's going to be a lot of speculation, a lot of speculation. That's all the next 10 and a half months are going to be. Speculation about the motives behind choosing somebody like Tucker Carlson. I mean, it's pretty clear that Donald Jr.'s suggestion isn't completely without merit, okay? You have to consider that. I mean, the ideology between Trump and Carlson could end up redefining GOP's approach to the election. The problem is, you have to deal with the mainstream media, who are constantly harping on the right about their lack of DEI. And I just want to remind you, that's what you have in the White House right now. You have a DEI White House. And look at Mayorkas, totally inept, lying to us every day of his wretched life about what's going on the border. Look at our Secretary of Transportation, Pete Buttigieg. He can't find his ass with both hands and a GPS. And we all know this. Look at our Vice President, Kamala Harris. Doesn't even know what planet she's on. In fact, I would argue that she's almost as inept mentally as the president is. But then again, neither she nor Joe Biden are running the show. The show is being run by Barack Obama. So I know from having read so many articles that there is a contingent in the political circles that really wants Tucker Carlson as a VP. I don't believe it's going to happen, because the whole idea here is to win. And you just can't win. And maybe I'm wrong, I've got to allow for that, but you just can't win if you don't have some semblance of diversity on your ticket. So, I mean, Donald Jr., a few minutes ago, when you heard Donald Jr. talking about Ben Carson would be excellent. I mean, think about that. The man speaks slowly and calmly in a measured tone of voice. I mean, nobody's going to freak out with Ben Carson. I mean, the man is brilliant. We all know that. My God, the guy's a freaking genius. And I would really feel good with Ben Carson as vice president. But does he have what it would take to take over as president if he had to? And my problem is, I mean, I agree with Don Jr. He's just too nice, way too nice for politics, especially an American brand of politics. So the political chessboard continues to shift. The notion of Tucker stepping into the role of vice president under a Trump-led ticket is more than just conjecture. It's a strategic move, and I think that's all it is. I don't think they're really serious about putting Tucker Carlson in there. I think it's a strategic move to gain more attention, more free publicity between now and a certain point during the primaries. That's all. My advice is, have fun with it. In an interesting few minutes of candor, J.P. Morgan CEO Jamie Dimon, you know him, a known Democrat supporter, issued a pretty stern warning to his own party. And the continued negative rhetoric toward MAGA could be, and I've mentioned this before. In fact, I think I mentioned this just the other day. The Democrats are shooting themselves in the foot. The Biden campaign, Biden in particular, shooting himself in the foot with all this talk about how the nation's greatest threat to democracy is MAGA, which, of course, is bullcorn. In fact, I would argue that the single greatest savior of this country will be the MAGA movement. So this continued negative rhetoric toward MAGA supporters is just going to really further hurt Joe Biden's chances of re-election. Thank goodness, because, I mean, project ahead just a few months. Project ahead 2 years from now. If Biden were to be re-elected and somehow they were able to keep the man long enough, you know, alive long enough, can you imagine the utter disaster for this country? We will be in a third world war. I can just about guarantee you that. So, Jamie Dimon's statement, I mean, think of this guy. He's a, to say that he's a prominent figure in the financial sector is a gross understatement. And he's underscoring this growing concern within the Democrat Party about the potential backlash from alienating a truly significant portion of the American electorate. Now, his observations came at a critical juncture for the Biden administration because they've been facing criticism from all kinds of different fronts, including the handling of the economic policies, international relations, Ukraine, Middle East, Israel, geez, China, dead. So Dimon pointed out that a lot of Americans voted for former President Trump because they believed he was correct on several key issues, like the economy, immigration, China. All concerns that resonate loudly with a huge number of voters who feel their voices are often dismissed. Now, always dismissed by the current political discourse, the current administration. They are constantly dismissing you and me. So here's Jamie Dimon. He appeared on CNBC the other day, I guess it was last Thursday, and had some interesting things to say during their little roundtable discussion, which for some reason was outdoors in the snow. I don't know where they were at the time, but that doesn't matter. Listen to what Mr. Dimon has to say. First, he's coaxed by one of the team members. They have three anchors and Jamie Dimon here on the TV screen. So here's how this discussion went, and pay particular attention to Jamie Dimon about a minute and a half into this.
How do you see the U.S. economy playing itself out over the next 12 months? This is an election year. We've been talking a lot about what just took place in Iowa and trying to understand how the American public is going to feel about the economy may ultimately dictate how the president is decided.
Yes, I agree with that. I think it's a mistake to assume that everything's hunky-dory. And, you know, and when stock markets are up, it's kind of like this little drug we all feel. Like, it's just great, you know. But remember, we've had so much fiscal and monetary stimulation. So I'm a little more on the cautious side that we are facing a lot of things in 2024 or 25. And you mentioned Ukraine, the terrorist activity in Israel, the Red Sea, quantitative tightening, which I still question if we understand exactly how that works. I don't think we do. How QE actually worked, what the effect of negative, you know, zero rates was for all this time. And obviously the politics, and you know, and then the Ukrainian war is affecting oil, gas, food, migration. So you have all these very powerful forces that are going to be affecting us in 24 and 25. So if I was the government, I would be preparing for what I'm going to do about that, assuming things aren't good. And I just also want to point out, I wish the Democrats would think a little more carefully when they talk about MAGA, you know, and you, if you travel this country. You know, and the country's unbelievable. We took our bus trip this year, and Leslie Picker was on Spokane and Boise and Bozeman. People are growing. They're hungry to grow. They're innovating. It's everywhere. It's not just Silicon Valley. So we've got this great hand. But when people say MAGA, they're actually looking at people voting for Trump, and they think they're voting, and they're basically scapegoating them, that you are like him. But I don't think they're voting for Trump because of his family values. Now, if you look, just take a step back, be honest. He was kind of right about NATO, kind of right about immigration. Mm-hmm. He grew the economy quite well.
China virus.
Tax reform worked. Mm-hmm. He was right about some of China. I don't like what he did.
No, I said China virus.
Yeah, I understand. He may have been right. And I don't like how he said things about Mexico. I don't like. But he wasn't wrong about some of these critical issues. And that's why they're voting for him. And I think people should be a little more respectful of our fellow citizens. And when you guys have people up here, you should always ask the why. Not like it's a binary thing. You're supporting Trump, you're not supporting Trump. Why are you supporting Trump?
It's hard to
Trump?
Hate 75 million of your fellow Americans. And
I agree.
It's done quite
and, you know, the Democrats have done a pretty good job with the deplorables, hugging onto their Bibles and their beer and their guns. I mean, really? Like, could we just stop that stuff and actually grow up and treat other people with respect and listen to them a little bit?
Jimmy,
and I do think the economy will affect. And I think this negative talk about MAGA is going to hurt Biden's election campaign.
I got to tell you, sometimes I think these people who claim to be Democrat-leaning really aren't. One of those people is Jonathan Turley, the legal scholar. Good man. And he claims that he's really a Democrat. But when I listen to him speak on Fox all the time, he certainly doesn't sound like one. Jamie Dimon's another one. But just the same, this cautionary stance, if you want to call it that, taken by Dimon, really shows a broader sentiment that's really the political strategy of vilifying Trump supporters. And this is not going to play well in America. It's certainly not going to play well in Poughkeepsie. It's not going to, maybe Poughkeepsie, but certainly not well in Des Moines. We've already proven that. So instead of engaging in constructive, helpful dialogue, the negative talk risks more polarization. Do we really need that? More polarization of our society? You know, it's a reminder that if you want to win in elections, the ability to win lies in building bridges rather than burning them. And if you recall, that's what Biden campaigned on. Back in 2020, he campaigned on building bridges. I'm going to unify the country. Wow, he's done a fine lot of that, hasn't he? Dimon's comments actually serve to highlight the importance of acknowledging the successes of past administrations. And he admitted that Trump had effectively grown the economy. You caught that, didn't you? He effectively grew the economy, addressed certain issues that were previously neglected. And this acknowledgement from a leading Democrat donor suggests that bipartisan recognition of achievements really could be a more effective approach than outright condemnation. This constant condemnation on the part of Joe Biden, vilifying everybody who doesn't agree with him, that's not going to play well, and we all know that. So naturally, the implications of Mr. Dimon's warnings are important because they suggest a shift in strategy might be necessary. Might, I think, is probably an understatement if the Democrats expect to gain any ground. And they must gain ground because, come on, we all know that the 2020 election was fraudulent. That was a fake election. The chances of them getting away with that again are pretty slim. Although, I will admit, the Republicans aren't doing enough to prevent it from happening again. And I'm not sure that they've got the goods to do it, to make sure that it doesn't happen again. But people are watching. Can you imagine what's going to happen the day after the elections if Biden wins again? I mean, anything goes. This country could break out into a real shooting civil war. There's also been speculation, and it's rather creepy when you think about it, but there's a lot of speculation now that points in the direction of a coup d'etat if Donald Trump wins. Because the elites in the Pentagon, the people running the Pentagon, are clearly on Biden's side. They're on Obama's side. They're on the Democrat side of things. Because they want to continue these endless wars. It keeps them in business. They know that Donald Trump is out to work for world peace and get this planet of ours spinning on an even keel so that everybody all over the world benefits. Democrats don't want that. The Democrats definitely want endless wars. Now, I'm not talking about your rank-and-file Democrats, the lunch pail people who work on an assembly line somewhere. They don't want endless wars. They don't want their kids ending up getting drafted and going into wars. But these are people who are your low-information voters. They conveniently forget all of the rotten things the Democrats have brought this country of ours in the last 100 years. And I mean, I've often wondered what it would have been like if when World War II broke out, we'd had a Republican administration in the White House. I will say this. When you consider who was running the country when World War II broke out, the country managed to prosecute that war pretty well in spite of the Democrat Party. It's the same thing as their handling of the Great Depression. The smartest thing the country could have done, the government could have done, when October 29th of 1929 hit, was they should have just said, okay, we're going to back off and let the free enterprise system do what it does best, innovate, invent, and work. That depression would have been over by the time FDR was elected president. Certainly by 1935, that depression would have been over. Now, I'm not going to take away the accomplishments of FDR. I mean, the whole Tennessee Valley Authority thing, that was pure genius. But he didn't hatch that alone. And that's the point here, really. Because with this demonization of MAGA on the part of the Democrats, on the part of the Biden administration, the Obama re-elect Joe Biden team, this demonization of clearly more than half of the country, that doesn't do anybody any good. Naturally, it doesn't do the Republicans any good, but it sure as hell doesn't do the Democrats any good. But you see, these Democrats, again, they're like that little kid that I keep talking about who throws a temper tantrum at the grocery store. Wants the candy, you say no, so he throws himself down on the floor, banging on the floor with his fists and his feet. And quite frankly, the best thing we could do while the Democrats are throwing their temper tantrum is to just laugh at them and carry on. Let's slide on into the Comedy Corner with Christy Condor.
I don't actually go to church. I work at a church. Anyway. Yeah, I'm in children's ministry. Been there forever. And so what I love teaching kids about Jesus is, you know, some amazing things about God, right? But I have learned that they're not the only ones that need Jesus. You know who else needs Jesus? Autocorrect. I was texting my pastor and his wife who just had a baby, and I said, I'm going to bring over a crock pot of chicken. It autocorrected to crack pipe of crystal. I was horrified, y'all. I was trying to edit, and he said, that's okay, the youth pastor already brought plenty. Oh my gosh. I love teaching kids about God, that because they also have some great observations. Like I got this one time. Hey, Miss Chrissy, if David had seen Bathsheba in the shower, would she have been shower Sheba? Never thought of it, but I think. Good observation. And then I had two little girls come up to me one time and go, Miss Chrissy, you remember when Moses crossed over the Red Sea? Yes. Do you remember when Pharaoh came in after them? Yeah. And you remember the water all came down on Pharaoh and they all died? Yeah. Does that mean the horses died too? Evil horses? Why did the horses have to die? I don't know. I think they became unicorns or something. Oh my gosh. But I love that you have to take secular games and turn them into church games, right? Like, we don't play duck, duck, goose. We play disciple, disciple, Judas. Y'all gonna love this one. We don't play pin the tail on the donkey. We play pin the nose on the leper. But the kids love it. And then we don't play dodgeball. We play stone the sinner.
Make it a marvelous Monday. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you on tomorrow's bombastic blogcast. Remember, no such thing as spare change, free lunch, or too much horsepower. And be sure to take some time today just to thank the good Lord that you're an American.
You mean that's it?
See you tomorrow, G-Man.